we've been talking about Rebbe Meir and Bruria and the very, very great depth that accompanied their worldview. And I just want to speak tonight about someone who you probably heard of, but associated with Rebbe Meir, and that is Rebbe Meir's teacher, Elisha ben Avuya. Everybody familiar? Exciting, but a tragic personality in the Talmud, Elisha ben Avuya. The long story in short is that in his years, he was the teacher of Rebbe Meir. That means that he was a contemporary of Rebbe Akiva. And he was, may or may not, I don't have that information, may or may not have lived during the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, because we're talking about 60, 70 years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, during the times of the Hadrian Decrees, awful times, as I've been describing for the last few weeks, awful times for the Jewish people. That's when he lived. Sorry. That's when his time was. And the story, as I say in short, is that he was the Gadol Hador. He was the greatest Rebbe and teacher and tzaddik, probably, in the entire generation, other than Rebbe Akiva. But he was a friend of Rebbe Akiva. He was a contemporary of Rebbe Akiva. If you'll drive through the Galil, let's say on Kfish Tishim, you know, Route 90, so with the Kinneret on your left and all of that countryside on your right, or you know that whole road, that was the area, that was the territory of Elisha ben Avuya. He had, according to some, 60 different yeshivas there. They had to have a lot of yeshivas because they didn't have cars. So there was no way to get from one to the other. So they had a lot of different yeshivas, and he was the Rebbe. He was the one that everyone consulted on difficult issues. Rebbe Akiva, just in terms of geographically, was more concentrated in the Lud Yerushalayim area. So at one period he was in Yerushalayim, and at one period he was more in Lud, in Bnei Brak. We find him in Bnei Brak, in the Haggadah, right? Rebbe Akiva was sitting in Bnei Brak. So he was in that, let's say, our area. That's where Rabbi Akiva lived. And Elisha ben Avuya was up north more. The Gadol Hador, who was a turncoat, he left not only the role of tzaddik in Rosh Hashiva, he became a complete apostate. He became a Russia. I mean, according to some opinions in the Gemara, he actually killed people or had them turned over to the Romans. I mean, he became very low. It was at the time. I mean, we'd have to understand that it was at a time at that time to live in that time. I mean, if you can only imagine somebody who is the greatest person in the generation becoming the most despised person in the generation, the person who you're afraid of, the informer to the Romans, he became a Roman. Not clear. One of the things I want to discuss here is what did he become exactly? What was his? What did he become philosophically? But as I say, the short story, before we get into the longer story, the short story is that he went from a very, very high place to a very, very low place. The interesting connection to Rebbe Meir, and here's our framework, is that Rebbe Meir, who we've been talking about for weeks, was not only his star pupil, but ended up his only pupil. he stuck with him. And he stuck with him through thick and through thin. He stuck with him even though he completely left Yiddishkeit and he said things which were completely heretical. He stuck with him. And he continued to learn from him. We have many, many Gemaras where he continued to learn from him. He asked him questions. He was his Rebbe. Who's your Rebbe? Elisha ben Avuya. After he, what the Gemara calls Latar Basra, after he left the fold, after he left the fold, it's interesting to try to imagine this, you know, this personality. It had a tremendous amount of not only brilliance but charisma. There's so many stories in the Gemara about his charisma and his ability to convince people and to bring them in his way. And in fact, he did bring many people down. And Reb Meir stuck with him. Beria was Reb Meir's wife. She apparently encouraged the relationship of Reb Meir with Acher, which makes sense because this is what we've been learning for the last few weeks, that Beria said, listen, nobody's completely bad. There's something good there. Don't knock him completely. There's something to learn from him. So more to that in a minute. What I want to discuss here for a few minutes is, and maybe bits and pieces of this you're familiar with, but let's put it together as a picture. What happened to Elisha ben Avuya? So the first thing that we have to learn, I gave you this Gemara here. This is the most important thing. The Gemara says, just where I put in that fancy arrow, a new program that I have. famous words of the Gemara. It tells us the story as follows. And we're going to read it, translate it, and then explain it. Arba, four people, nichnasu bepardes, entered into the pardes. How would you like to translate pardes?
Orchard.
Certainly the word paradise came from the word pardes. So they walked into some type of a Kabbalistic situation, some type of a trance Kabbalistic situation, four together. Ve'eluhain, and this is who they were, four people, contemporaries obviously in that generation, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, which is the new name that we gave to Elisha ben Avuya after he left the fold, we started to call him Acher. So it's Acher. Acher means him, the other guy. They didn't want to say his name properly. For Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva. Now, this was a sort of a spiritual expedition that took place under the guidance and leadership of Rabbi Akiva. So it means that Rabbi Akiva gathered together the three, including himself, four greatest people in the generation, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Elisha ben Avuya, just tells you who they are, and himself. And he says, we're going to go on this spiritual expedition, and we're going to go be metayo, but pardes, we're going to stroll in the pardes. Just read a couple of lines, whether we understand it or not. Amar Lahem Rabbi Akiva, before they started on this expedition, Rabbi Akiva said to the other three, Kishatem Megiyim Etzel Avnei Shayish Tahar, in our exploration, in our expedition, we will come upon some Avnei Shayish Tahar, some very pure stones of marble. Al Tomru, when you see it, don't say Mayim Mayim, it's only water. This needs to be explained, obviously, but just even the most simple shot is like sometimes you're standing on the diving board and it's all shiny and glittery and it looks nice, so you dive and it was marble, that looks like it was a type of a crystal or something. So that's an ouch, right? So he says during this spiritual journey that we're going on, don't be fooled by what you see. Let's learn the simple shot is don't take anything at face value. What you see is not necessarily what it is. We're in a very, very high place. The Gemara reports, if you skip a few words for me, what happened during the spiritual expedition? Ben Azai hitzitzu meis. Ben Azai peaked and he died. That's pretty intense. Allah of Omer, and on him the Torah says, Yakar Be'ina Hashem, how difficult it is in the eyes of Hashem, Hamavsala Chasidav, when his righteous people die. Ben Zoma, man too, Hitzitz Vinifka. He peaked. We don't know what they peaked at. He peaked Vinifka. He went crazy from the situation. Allah of Omer, they used to quote this pasuk. If you find something good, some honey, don't overdo it because you'll end up making yourself sick and nothing will stay. Acher, Elisha ben Avuya, our subject for the evening, Kitzeitz ben Atios. Kitzeitz ben Atios means that he pruned or he cut all the trees down. Kitzeitz ben Atios. That's what he did. Rabbi Akiva was Yatza B'Shalom. Rabbi Akiva was fine. So, here's a tradition, a mysterious tradition that we have in the Gemara about four Gedolei Hador, four of the greatest people of the generation, and it became 4 minus 3 because Ben Zoma, Ben Azai, and Elisha Ben Avuya all lost it. One died, one went crazy, one lost his faith, and Rabbi Akiva was fine. So, what we need to understand, this basis, what we're entitled to understand about this story, is what were they after? What were they doing? What are we supposed to learn from this? And what actually happened to these people? What did they see? It's a complicated question, not because it's complicated. We can't handle it. I think we can, but just complicated. It's hours and hours. But just try to get a rough sketch. First of all, again to the times, it's clear to me that when these tzaddikim were living in such an intense time in Jewish history, it was a time of Hadrian decrees. It was a time not just of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, but it was a time of everybody losing their homes. It was a time of starvation. It was hunger and starvation, famine. It was a time of not just losing your homes, but displacement. People didn't know where they were going to be. It was a time of losing. The Hadrian decree said you're not allowed to keep Shabbos. You're not allowed to study Torah. You're not allowed to do Bris Milah. So it was a time of a terrible challenge, difficult challenge for the Jewish people. It was a time when Hadrian and Vespasian before him killed the Asara Haruge Malchus. They killed the 10 martyrs. So that means they were dead, publicly tortured. We learned last week about the killing of Hanina ben Trajan and how they burnt him at the stake. There were 10 such people, amongst them Rabbi Akiva, who went in there, the one who was B'Shalom. So it was a very, very terrible time. It was a very difficult time. And it was a time when, besides for trying to survive and teach Torah and be busy with, saving people's lives and sheltering them from the Hadrian decrees, it was certainly a time when the tzaddikim of that generation questioned. And they said, let's try to figure out spiritually what is going on in the world today. What is going on that this is happening to us? I mean, what are we? How bad are we that this is happening to us? And anybody who's been through Tisha B'Av, especially if you've been here for Tisha B'Av, has heard a lot about the analysis of the tzaddikim at that time. But this is one story. This is a story about not just let's take a walk in an orchard. Let's take a look at a garden. It sounds like a very pleasant experience. But let's have this sort of a Kabbalistic session together in which maybe we can gain insight into the situation of the day. That was the scenario, that was the backdrop of the Arba Shenichnas of the Pardes, of the four that went into the Pardes. Very important to understand. So what basically, they walked into the situation with, not to be trite, but to use the language of the world, with the question of why do the righteous suffer? Or in Talmudic language, why is there tzaddik v'raloi? Why would it be that there should be a tzaddik v'raloi and it doesn't go good for that tzaddik? This is, by the way, a question which has plagued generations of people. To ignore the question is to be in denial. To change our behavior, the question is to give up. Can't do that either. But it's a challenging question. It's a challenging question to see the you know, the suffering, and then to keep on davening to Hashem. To say modim anachnu lach, we thank you, Hashem. They said that language during the Hadrian decrees. We thank you, Hashem. Modim anachnu lach. They said the brachos of the morning, like we say. Even to say modani lefanacha, thank you for waking up. How thankful were they for waking up in the morning? Really. So they went into the parties. Yes, I'm sorry.
Even, I remember you were talking about, I don't know, like last year, we talked about even Moshe Rabbeinu had that question.
Right. It's the question. I say to ignore the question is to be in denial. It's not like a religious thing to ignore the question. The religious thing to do is to engage it. This is what you see happen. So Rabbi Akiva led the expedition. You know, it's interesting, just as an aside, it's interesting how apparently four people, great people, I mean, he only picked the greatest for this. He didn't say to the whole Jewish people, he get up in shul or in front of his 24,000 students and said, let's go into the parties. This was a hand-picked group. It's interesting how four people can walk into a situation which is exactly the same and come out completely different. I just think, I don't know if this is accurate or if it's just a feeling that I have, but I just think to myself of, like, in my own childhood when everybody in my parents' generation had gone through the Holocaust, just like everybody in Shul. Everybody in Shul was a Holocaust survivor. And it was, you had the guy, I mean, I was a child, but you had the guy who came out of the Holocaust and says, I don't want to know about Shul, and I don't want to know about Davin, and I want to know about, you know, and who's going to go question, you know, what he saw, and what, you know, and just dropped the whole thing somehow. And then you had the one who said, you know, like, no, like, I became stronger in through these sorrows, it strengthened me, and they became, like, you know, seriously from. You have those that went crazy. They simply lost their ability to think clearly. I mean, that doesn't mean that they became dysfunctional, but nebuch, you know, people that were screaming in the middle of the night and nightmares. And you had people that died. You know, that just, either they took their lives or the lives were taken, but the lives were gone. And if they didn't die literally, they died figuratively. Something inside of them died, and that was the... So it reminds me always when I think about the Arba Nichnasu L'Pardes. Now, going into a gas chamber is not going into any kind of an orchard, you know. But it's an experience where you're... It's similar in this regard. What I'm saying is radical, by the way. I don't think you hear it from anybody else, but I believe it's true. That this was a painful exercise, because when you're asking, when you're trying to figure out suffering, you're confronting the suffering, and that is the same confrontation that one has when they're in a concentration camp. It is a similar situation. Why? It's that why, and just working with it Kabbalistically, and look how four people went in, four seemingly similar tzaddikim, the leaders of the Jewish people, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, so many beautiful stories about them, and so much life to them, and three out of four lost it. Rabbi Akiva, what was the secret to Rabbi Akiva? This is not radical, but cynical. I do also have a feeling that a lot of the people came out of a situation different. Sometimes it's because they went into it different. You know, I remember when I was a rabbi of a shul of all Holocaust survivors, so in Buffalo, New York. So there was lots of screaming and arguing going on, you know, like if one person would take somebody else's aliyah, you know, sometimes they'd punch them. It wasn't just, you know, I don't think they would, like, punch them, you know, like, these are very tough people, you know. I mean, you had to be tough to survive, you know, what they survived, so they were tough, like, much tougher than me, and I was a 22-year-old rabbi. It was very, very tough, you know. But I remember once saying to somebody that, saying to one of them, there was a big fight, so I said, look, don't judge him for for screaming like that and losing his temper and swearing, you know, look what he went through. He went through the Holocaust and everything. The other guy says, I knew him before the Holocaust. Same thing. Same thing. So, you know, okay, like I'm not, you know, like I'm just, I'm not even judging that whole generation. I'm just saying that, as they say, I'm just saying that. Yeah, it's a lot of times like how you come out has a lot to do with how you went in, and it becomes maybe more so. So to say this, that Rabbi Akiva was Yatza B'Shalom, Rabbi Akiva went out B'Shalom, Rabbi Akiva went in B'Shalom. There was Elisha ben Avuya, or Acher, let's call him for short, did not go in B'Shalom. And his faith was taken away from him. And Ben Azai and Ben Zalma, we'll talk about them. It's interesting. Interesting, the four characters or the four personalities, if you will.
Was that episode after, I think there's some kind of legend about him being upset seeing about a bird.
So let's talk about this.
Was that before that, which just started in him already?
It's hard to know. It's hard to know. So let me say this before we go any further. We're going to focus here. We're going to focus on Elisha ben Avuya, because if I start with Rabbi Akiva and Ben Azai and Ben Zalma, so we'll be here all night. We'll get to that too. But let's focus on Elisha ben Avuya. He was the one who walked into this paradise and lost his faith. Now the truth is, there are different places in the Gemara that talk about. This was a conversation piece. I mean, this is Elisha ben Avuya lost. It was a conversation. A lot of people lost their faith with him. I mean, imagine the Rebbe. He was the Rebbe. He was the tzaddik. He was the guy. Just imagine such a thing. You know. I don't want to even say names of. Could you imagine if so and so would just lose their faith? I don't even want to say it, but you know, it would be sort of disrespectful. But just imagine. You know, you don't need me to say the name. Just imagine whoever you respect the most in this world. As a religious leader, a Torah leader, would just lose their faith. You know, the Gemara says a number of things. One of the things that the Gemara says, maybe four things. One thing the Gemara says is that Elisha ben Avuya was sitting in those beautiful plantations to the left of Route 90. Before you get to between Sfas and Tveria, exactly where he was. He was standing there and he was studying Torah, and he saw a father send his son. He said, climb the tree and do the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. Do the mitzvah of, there's a bird up there, do the mitzvah, bring me the egg, send away the bird, like it says in the Torah. And Elisha ben Avuya is watching, the Gemara says, And he watches that the kid jumps up the tree and he climbs up the tree like a kid will do, and he sends away the bird and he takes the eggs and he's bringing it to his father, and he falls down and he dies. Such is the episode in the Gemara. So says Elisha ben Avuya, hold on a second. Two mitzvahs he's doing here. He's doing a mitzvah of honoring his father. He's doing a mitzvah of sending away the bird, the mother bird, and taking the eggs. In both of those two mitzvahs, are the only two mitzvahs where it says that if you do these mitzvahs, l'man yarichun yamecha al ha'adama, you will have longevity. The only two places that I know of that the Torah promises longevity for doing a mitzvah. So if you would have done the mitzvah of putting on tefillin and you die while you're putting on tefillin, okay, you know, things happen. But to die, the irony of dying, you know, so first of all, to see a kid fall off a tree and die, that's pretty traumatic right there. But does that shake your faith? Maybe, right there, you know. But he was in the middle of the Hadrian decrees, you know. But what is this that he's going and he's doing two mitzvahs which promise l'man yarichun yamecha, that you'll have arichus yamim, and it and he dies. Yatzah l'tar b'sra. So the Gemara says that when he saw this, yatzah l'tar b'sra, he went off the derech. Elisha ben Avuya. Our man. Gemara says another story of he was roaming in Jerusalem, and he's roaming in Jerusalem, and one of the last of the 10 martyrs was Chutzpah. His name was Chutzpis. I don't know why that was his name, but that was his name, Chutzpis Hamaturgamon. So Chutzpis Hamaturgamon, Hamaturgamon were the people, right before they had PA systems, you know, microphones. So the Rebbe would talk. It could have 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people needing to listen. So how do they hear? So you need the chutzpahs to get up and to scream it. So he would scream it here, and he would scream it there, and he would scream it here. So he would listen, and he would scream it. He was saying over the Torah. Hadrian had him killed because he was defying in public. He was the one, more than the Rebbe, he was the one that was shouting out the words of Torah when it was against the law in Israel to study Torah. Imagine. So he was killed by the Romans, and they viciously carved out his tongue, because it was his tongue that was sharing the words of Torah, and they were always trying to make an example out of these people. So, and they threw it to the dogs. The dog grabs the tongue. I'm sorry if I'm grossing you out. I'm just telling you the story. The dog, one of the dogs, grabbed the tongue of Chutzpah on the Turgaman and is running through the streets. And Elisha ben Avoya looks at him and he says, "Hold on. How could it be? Lashon Shenasa Zav, a tongue that spoke only of gold. How Eich Yilachecha Ofer Bekelav? How could it possibly be in the mouth of a dog?" Yotzo l'tarbusra. Another story. Yotzo l'tarbusra. He went off the derech. In a way, it was the same thing. And who knows? You know, probably what's going on here is that the rabbis in the generation after him are discussing and trying to figure out what happened to Elisha ben Avoya. What happened to him? And they said, well, you know, there was this story, this really shook him up, and then there was that story, and that really shook him up. Was it the tongue or was it the tree? It's the same thing. Why would righteous people need to suffer? And, yeah.
Are you still saying that this is the Knesset HaKodesh? In other words?
No. Separate.
Because that was also supposed to be like about people suffering.
That's what I'm saying. It's four different episodes. There's the episode of going into the Pardes, which the Gemara says he was Yatzel Tar Basra. There's the episode of the tree, which the Gemara says he was Yatzel Tar Basra. Yatzel Tar Basra means he went off the Derech. And there was the story of the Tarbut. And then there was the story of Chutzpis HaMeturgamon that pushed him away. So, and then there's a fourth story. So the fourth story says, which is the most enigmatic of them all, because these we can kind of understand. The fourth story says that, you know what it was? This wasn't when he was here, when he was there, when he was in Yerushalayim, when he was in Tveria. This was at his bris. That's where he went off to Derech. At his bris, his baby. Yeah. Well, the baby off to Derech, his bris. So the Gemara tells an odd story. The Gemara says that at his father, Avuya, Elisha ben Avuya, so his father was Avuya. Avuya was a famous philanthropist, and a very wealthy man in Yerushalayim. Me'ashirei Yerushalayim. He was from the wealthy people of Yerushalayim before the destruction of the temple. There was four big wealthy people, Kalvus Avua, Avuya, four famous wealthy people, and they were, by the way, able to, these four were able to, even after the Roman siege, and they wouldn't let any food in, and nothing came in, nothing came out of Yerushalayim, they fed, they're the ones that fed everybody, these four. So this Avuya, rich guy, rich man, so the big tycoon has a baby, and makes a bris, and he invites all the rabbis to come to the bris, and of course everybody comes, you know, what's gotta come. He calls, you come. So they're sitting at the bris, and there's a lot of you know, hakarai at the bris. You know, the press is there, and people are there, and you know, it's like a who's who in Jerusalem event. You know, and the rabbis are feeling like out of place or uncomfortable at this, you know, high class bris. You know, I'm no great rabbi, but I often feel uncomfortable at these things. I'll say, you know, everyone's walking around with a martini with it. You know, okay. You know, what am I doing here? You know, but rich guy, so there, you know, like a rich guy. So anyway, so they said, the rabbi said, it sounds exactly as Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yeshua, like the colleagues of Rabbi Akiva, they said that, you know, let them do theirs, v'anachnu nasik b'didon, and we'll do ours. Let them do theirs, we'll do ours. They're waiting for the moil to come, probably. So they went into a room, and they started to study Torah, and they got involved in their Torah, and that's what they were doing. It was a special rabbi chamber. A miracle happened. I don't know how to interpret this, but a miracle happened, and a sort of a fire came down from Shemayim, and encompassed them in their learning. Understand it as you will. You know, can understand it literally or figuratively, however you want to understand, metaphorically. But a fire came down and surrounded them. Yotzei Shmina Shemayim. We find this fire in 3-4 places in the Gemara. We find that during certain kinds of learning, a fire came down. Avuya walks in to call the rabbis or to greet the rabbis. He sees this fire, so he says, "Lahachriv Beisi Atavodi, coming to burn my house down? What's going on? What's up with the fire?" So they said, no, we have all the covet for you in the world. We're just learning Torah, and this is what happens when we learn Torah. He was excited about the moment of the bris of his son, Elisha ben Avuya, and his response was, you know what? If this is what happens when you learn Torah, like if this is what you could do, you could create this kind of fire when you learn Torah. So I'm now going to say, whatever it takes, however much money it takes, whatever it takes, this son who's having a bris today will be only for Torah. He'll be only for Torah. So he dedicated sort of his son like a nazir, you know, like he dedicated his son to 100% a life of Torah. He will never have to worry. He could study Torah. And he grew up and he became a brilliant student and everything was taken care of for him. He grew up as a rich kid. And eventually, we know, went off the derech. Says the Gemara that being that his haschala, being that his beginning, was shelo lishma, was for incorrect purposes, so therefore he eventually left the derech.
What do you mean it was for incorrect?
So this is the most perplexing of all, meaning that you don't teach your kid Torah because you want fires to come, or you don't want, because you want them to have a lot of kavod, or you want to do something spectacular. You teach your kid Torah because that's what we're created for, and Hashem gave us the Torah to learn Torah.
The fires signify just how, what could be greater than studying Torah that this would happen?
Right. So
the spiritual greatness.
It certainly could, and that's what I would have thought. I certainly would have learned it that way, but the Gemara doesn't learn it that way. The Gemara learns it that they understood their insight into his father's mind was, you know, that this is a good thing. There's a lot of kavod here. You know, it's you know, I could buy myself a, you know, I'll tell you another a quick story. Just comes to mind, like a, also in Buffalo at the same time, but I was reaching out to people and learning with them, and most of them completely non-religious people. That was, but mostly because there were no religious people. I mean, I would have been happy to learn with religious people, but there were none. So learn with who you can, you know. So I reached out to, like, that's what I would do. I would go to lawyers' offices or business people's offices, and I would say to them, this is what I did. I said to them, like, I don't want any money. And I don't want any, donations or anything like that. I'm a shiloh. I just, what I want is you're a community leader, and I want to study with you for an hour a week. You know, we could all, an hour a week, like, you should understand. I would tell them a few different things about Judaism. Like, you're on the Jewish Federation. Do you know who, can you tell me who Aaron was? You know, can you tell me who, you know, can you tell me how many years the Jews were in the desert? They did nothing. They didn't know anything. So you're the Jewish Federation. You know, you're the president of the Reformed Temple. How could you not know these things? So I, one in every 10 said, yes, they'll learn with me. And I developed over a year, let's say 60 people a week that I would learn with, 60 people. Some I go to them, some they come to me. That was what I did. So there was one guy who was like a fabulously wealthy fellow. just happened to be, you know. And, you know, he actually came to my house every week, and he would come in this, like, really cool car. And he learned. He was, like, a really wealthy guy. He didn't have any worries. Philosopher sat back and was talking about this. I'm a young guy. So what week we're learning, and he says to me, you know, he says to me, Rabbi, how much would it cost me to get my own rabbi? So I'm thinking about this, like, meaning, like, right. So I said, well, I'm learning with you. No, he says, I don't want to share, like, with the congregation and with, I have my own, like, so in other words, like, in his mind, like, I have a driver, I have a butler, you know, I have a trainer, you know, personal trainer, you know, and I have a cook. So I need a rabbi. Like, what it was, like, I'm not of the income level where I have, you know, where I go to a gym, you know, one personal trainer for everybody, my own rabbi, you know, I need my own rabbi. So I remember this conversation just, like, it stuck in my mind, but it just, I said to him, like, look, you're here to learn Torah. Let me teach you something. You know, you're all mixed up. You have a completely upside down. You don't get a rabbi like you get a cook. It's because, like, what's wrong with this thinking, right? This is supposed to be a leader. This is supposed to be somebody who's telling you what to do, not you're telling you what to do. So I said, with the scenario that you're describing is an impossible scenario. It's just an impossible scenario. Can't work. You know. So he said, how about $80,000? So it's like he raised his price and it was like 50 to 80, but personal rabbi, you know. Okay. All right, at $100,000 I couldn't resist any longer. <Anyway. laughs> No, but what I'm bringing out is, like, there's this concept of, you know, like, with money I can buy anything. There's a concept, and to a large degree it's true. But there's some things that you can't buy with money. You can't necessarily buy health with money. You can't necessarily buy longevity with money. You can't necessarily buy happiness with money. You can't buy love with money. You know, and you can't buy a rabbi with money. That's exactly right. You can't buy. Some things you're just not supposed to be able to buy. So this avuya, and if you can buy it, so then the whole thing is garnished. You know, like, the whole thing is nothing. If you can buy it, then it's not the real thing. The very fact that you can buy it is not the real thing. So this avuya, the way I understood it, like, you know, looking at these rabbis, you know, how much will it cost me for that fire? You know, like, I like the fire. It's a nice touch in my house. If it's not burning anything, these are fires that do no destruction, because spiritual fires don't destroy anything. Like in this parsha, like the burning bush, it's burning, 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 nothing is being destroyed. I like that. Wouldn't you like to have one of those in your living room? So that's
bring this together.
Yeah, beautiful. The fireplace never burns out.
But it wasn't the teacher, it wasn't him, it was his father.
It was his father, but
maybe he had good kavanah.
Well, he didn't have any kavanah, but
not at that age, but as he grew up.
I can only say this, that probably, and you'll have to agree with me, that probably this was the way he was brought up. He was brought up, learn a lot of Torah, and you'll get a lot of kavanah. Learn a lot of Torah, and you'll get that fire coming down. Learn a lot of Torah, and you'll become a big, you know, you'll have a lot of power. You know, that.
He did.
And then it backfired. So I believe, so here you have four stories. You have the story of the bris, the story of the tree, the story of the tongue, and the story of the pardes. What's the true story? They're all true stories, meaning that, but what I think what the Gemara is saying is, I believe what the Gemara is saying is, that if you're learning and you're doing and you're being Jewish, lishma, you're doing it for the right reasons, and it's not about getting any kind of reward, so then it won't shake you. It won't shake your faith to the degree that it did when you see that reward is not being given. When you're brought up with, what am I buying here? And then your purchase turns against you, and instead of seeing something wonderful happen from my Torah, I see a kid falling off a tree. And I see a great rabbi being killed, and 10 great rabbis being killed for that matter. So then I have to say to myself, what am I doing this for? So it's really all comes down to the education that he received, and I believe this is what the Gemara means, which started off from the breast, meaning it was in the mother's milk. I shouldn't blame his mother, the Gemara doesn't say anything about the mother, but it was his father's education that this whole life was wrong. You could do everything right, but it was wrong. Everything was wrong. So when everything is wrong, it becomes impossible to deal with the challenges that come your way. This is something which a while ago crystallized in my mind, and I'm understanding, like, why is our faith shaken every once in a while? And the answer is because there's that exactly to the degree where there is some insincerity, or let's not call it insincerity, some shalol lishma, some doing things for me and not for the purpose that it was given, and not to be of service, and not altruistically. It's exactly to that degree where I cannot deal with the tragedy that's happening in front of my eyes. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't work for me. But once you understand that, you have to do what you have to do either way. If you get rewarded, fine. If you don't get rewarded, I still have to do it. I'm not in it for the money or for the kavod. And once you understand that there's an olam haba, and there's a place for kavod, you know, there's a place for... It's interesting that if you turn the pages in the Gemara, I don't know how many people realize this connection. The Gemara says that years later the question was asked, why did this child fall off the tree? Years later, in the Beis Medrash, so Taka, why did the child fall off the tree? And Amar Rabbi Yaakov, so Rabbi Yaakov said, or a certain Rabbi Yaakov said, that because when the Torah says, Laman Yarichun Yamecha, that so that you shall have long years, it's not talking about long years in this world, it's talking about long years in the world to come, forever years, eternal years. That was the answer.
Doesn't it say
Al HaAdama? Al HaAdama probably means, if anything, means that a longevity for the Jewish people will have longevity in, like, Kabed, what it probably, I mean, the simple shot is, Kabed es avicha es imecha, l'man yarichun yamecha, Al HaAdama, meaning if you honor your parents, if there's a tradition of parents to child, so we will be in Eretz Yisrael for a long time, thousands of years. It doesn't mean necessarily me, because this doesn't all take place in Eretz Yisrael. But what this Rabbi Yaakov said was, he's talking about Olam Haba. What do you do with Al Adam Amar? Yom Shekulei Aruch. This Rabbi Yaakov, interesting, was a grandson of Elisha ben Avuya. So the Gemara makes a comment and says that if Elisha ben Avuya would have realized this, he wouldn't have gone Latarbutra, he wouldn't have gone off the Darf. You know, oh, you know, the whole world gets shaken up. Why didn't somebody just tell him that it means Olam Haba? But as the Gemara is saying something very deep here. The Gemara is not saying, oh, somebody would have whispered in his ear. No, you're reading the Pasuk wrong. It's talking about Olam Haba. He wouldn't have gone off the Darf. That's all it means. If his focus would have been that I'm not in this world to get, I'm in this world to give, and I'm doing things because Hashem wants me to do them, and there's Hashem in this world, so then you would not have crushed and crumbled in the face of tragedy and adversity. So all the stories are really one story. So then, as you point out, Rabbi Akiva takes him along into this journey of the Pardes. And the Pardes was to exactly this. The Pardes was to try to discover why the righteous are suffering. Well, this was, like I say, how you go in is how you come out. This was Elisha ben Avuya's, passion to understand, why should I suffer if I'm doing good things? It doesn't make any sense to suffer. I'm expecting some reward here. I'm not expecting this kind of suffering. Why am I seeing people suffering? And if they are suffering, why am I doing it? Why am I doing it? There's no other reason to do it. There's no other reason to to do Yiddishkeit if you're only doing it for reward. So if the reward's not there, leave me alone. How many people, like if you went to a job because it was a good paying job, and then they stopped paying you? How many of us would just stay there for the heck of it? I'm here for the money. Like, nice, I like you, you like me, it's a nice thing, good cause, everything, but here for the money. Elisha ben Avuya, apparently, in a very, very deep way, was in it for this world. It was his grandson that said, wow, if he would have only understood that it's not about this world, it's about the next world, it would have been altogether different. But he didn't believe that, and he didn't understand that. Why? So the Gemara traces it back to the Bris, meaning the original educational system of a child. I'm sorry, somebody want to say something?
I have two questions, but not necessarily need an answer. These were the biggest people in the generation. So there's two things I want to know why they didn't know about this idea of there was a gezeira out. Obviously, it was like a Holocaust, what you're telling us, the most terrible time. The temple would be destroyed and it would be this terrible situation. And we're taught that even a tzaddik goes down when there's a gezeira. So there's no individual hashkacha then when there's a whole terrible time for the whole community. That's one thing. And the other thing is, they must have known about this concept of gilgulim, that if someone dies young, there are explanations. Why should they have gone mad like they weren't learning people?
Okay, but this is in direct contradiction to the verse of the Torah. Right? It's a direct contradiction. Everything that you're saying is what Rabbi Akiva understood, which is why Rabbi Akiva was Rabbi Akiva. This is why Rabbi Akiva was our teacher. Everything that you're saying, the perspective, the context, the big picture, if you will, and understanding was Rabbi Akiva. And so much so that he realized that a tzaddik is part of the gzeira, that he himself didn't resist being tortured to death. That's so much so that he realized it. You know, if that's what has to be, he'll be a martyr. So the pardes. Let's understand that just a little bit. The Ari says, the Arizal says that they didn't actually go anywhere, you know, like, let's enter the Pardes. They didn't go anywhere there. So it was rather a study. And the study is called, Kabbalah is called Pardes. The reason why Kabbalah is called Pardes in Shulchan Aruch, the reason it's called Pardes is because it stands for Pshat, Remez, Drush, Sod. Pardes. So Pshat is every pasuk of Torah has its simple understanding, what it says, has its remez, has its drush, has its sod, has its kabbalah. So what Rabbi Akiva, the expedition according to the Ari, was to take them to a deeper place of understanding. According to others, that before the Ari, like the Ramban, it was an actual sort of, I don't want to say a seance because it's the wrong word, but it was an actual a spiritual trance-like situation of where maybe Rabbi Akiva was leading them. It seems like from the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva was actually leading them in visualizations and trying to understand what's going on in Shemayim. And according to the way the Gemara says it, they really did see stuff. I mean, they really, the windows of the heavens were actually open and they actually did see stuff. And each one saw the same thing and had a different reaction. The Gemara goes on to describe what they saw. I just don't want to go into it this minute because it's not a good thing to do just a little bit. It's
not before bedtime.
Right? No, it's fascinating. It's actually fascinating. I'm actually writing about this. I'll tell you. Let me keep you in suspense for another week. No, because it's not a 5 minute, but it's fascinating. Let me say this though. This is what happened to Remez. This is our context. What we understand of what happened to Elisha ben Avuya. We have an idea. Remeir continued to learn from him. And not only continued to learn from him, it seems from the Gemara that he actually continued to believe in him. He believed that deep inside he was good. You know, it's something interesting. One of the things that, there's a lot of stories in the Gemara about Elisha ben Avuya. It seems like that they were, not to say anything disrespectful about the Gemara's rabbi, it seems like they were almost obsessed with him. They just kept on talking about him. This was like an interesting person, you know, Elisha ben Avuya. So one of the things that the Gemara says is that there was a story where Elisha ben Avuya, where Yom Kippur came out on Shabbos. And Elisha ben Avuya wasn't keeping Shabbos and he wasn't keeping Yom Kippur. So he was riding on his horse on Yom Kippur Shechalios B'Shabbos, is the Gemara. Horseback riding. And he was passing by the Makom HaMikdash, the Kosel. So he's driving around. Picture this: Yom Kippur, Shabbos. You know, even the Chilonim don't drive; they'll ride. You know, maybe they ride horses, ride bikes. I know, but you know, on Yom Kippur in the Old City, it falls out on Shabbos. You can't get a holier situation. The holiest place, the holiest day, on the holiest day, Shabbos, Shabbos, and Shabbos, and like three times. And Rabbi Akiva's riding his horse Keneged Makom HaMikdash by the Kosel, and Rabbi Meir is running after him and asking him questions. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? Fascinating, like, setting to a story. And the Gemara goes on to say what he asked him, what he answered him. You know, I once heard with my ears. I heard from Rav Soloveitchik, one of his great lectures that he used to give in Yeshiva University. I never went to Yeshiva University, but I used to go there for these great lectures of Rav Soloveitchik. So I once heard him say, like, if Elisha ben Avuya didn't want to keep Yom Kippur and he didn't want to keep Shabbos and he wanted to go horseback riding, aren't there other trails in Eretz Yisrael than going to the Kosel? I mean, why would he go dafka, like, in the holiest place on Yom Kippur and ride his horse? You don't want to know from it. You don't know if you go to Tel Aviv. You don't want to know about it. You know, you go to Nahariya or something. What's he doing? What's he doing at Eilat? You know, what's he doing here? This is an intense place. Why would he go here? None of us would do that. So Rav Soloveitchik says, to me it seems, this is what he said, to me it seems that his outer self didn't want Shabbos and didn't want Yom Kippur, but his neshama was pulling him to the Kosel. And this was something that was warring inside of him. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said, which is so true. It's so insightful because Rabbi Meir, remember Rabbi Meir, he was the one who was dangling the sheretz and saying there's a lot of good stuff in this sheretz, right? Rabbi Meir was running after him at this place and asking him questions. And Rabbi Meir saw, obviously, something, because Rabbi Meir had this koach, and this is what we've been discussing for weeks, Rabbi Meir had this koach to see something that nobody else could see, no matter how bad he was. Now, let me end off with this. The Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, halachically, how did Rabbi Meir learn Torah from Elisha ben Avuya? You're not supposed to learn Torah from a Russia. Not allowed. It's a halacha. That's what the Gemara states, a halacha. The Gemara says you're not allowed to learn Torah from a Russia, from an evil person. Because Torah has to come from a neshama. If your neshama is all corrupt, then the Torah is going to be corrupt. So says the Gemara, how did Rabbi Meir learn from Elisha? So the Gemara says three answers. Three metaphors. The most famous metaphor is, he said, Rimon Motsasi, I found a pomegranate. Toho Ochalti, I ate the insides. Uklipasai Sarandi, and I threw out the klipa, the shell. That was the one metaphor. You're talking about already time, Rav and Abaye, like a few hundred years later. They were saying this in the name of Rabbi Meir. Another would say, no, that's not what I heard from Rabbi Meir. What I heard from Rabbi Meir is that he used to say, Tamar Matsasi. I found a tamar, a date. Bisara yachalti, I ate its meat, its and its basar, and I threw out its garin, its seed. B'marava, but in Eretz Yisrael, meaning in the Talmud Yerushalmi, it says, that's not what we heard from Rabbi Meir. What he used to say is, egos matzasi, I found a nut. Klipasa zarakti, v'toyeva yachalti. So I threw out the outside. So, you know, you look at this and you say, what's the difference if it was a pomegranate, if it was a date, or if it was just a nut? If he was just a nut. Like, what's the difference? So I thought about this a little bit. Tell me if you agree with me. And I think it's like, it's a profound difference. It's like this. A nut, is the outside is hard, like a walnut, say. Like, the outside is, like, impassable. Can't do anything with it, like a piece of wood. You open it up, the inside is wonderful. So what's he saying? The Elisha ben Avuya, very, very thick outside, very, very bad outside, nothing to do, nothing to eat, throw it away, but the inside is wonderful. Another one said, no, that's not what he used to say. You say he found a date. What's a date? A date is the outside is beautiful, and the inside you can't eat. It's exactly the opposite. Really, a date and a nut, as far as dividing the two things, is completely opposite. What was their argument? The argument there was, did Rameyer say that, look, he's a bad guy, but inside he's really good? Or did Rameyer say, no, he's a good guy, but inside he's really bad? I mean, he there's a lot to learn from him, so it's inside. I don't have to deal with the inside. I'm dealing only with the outside. So there was an inside-outside question here that was going on between the commentators on how Rabbi Meir learned from him. And comes the end of the Gemara and says, you know what it was? The way we heard it, which we think is the right way, is that he found a pomegranate. Now, pomegranate's interesting because it's not the inside, it's not the outside. It's like all mixed up. It's like a complete, you open up a pomegranate. It's all mixed up. Besides, the pomegranate is the symbol of Torah and symbol of mitzvahs. But it's all mixed up. There's good, there's bad. It's very difficult to pick out the good. Why do we only eat pomegranates on Rosh Hashanah, or if they make it into juice? Because it's too complicated. It makes mess and spritzes. You know, like pomegranates, that's very, very strong, a pomegranate, but it's not a nut, and it's not a date. It's a whole mishmash of stuff with a lot of seeds and a lot of shell and a lot. But if you can pick out, some good stuff. So very interesting. Like you have a three-way argument as to how to look at Elisha ben Avuya. There's no clarity here. But what I want to say before we get to, you know, if you want to go further into what he saw in the Pardes, I'm happy to do it. But we just have to spend a whole time on it. But what we have for tonight is to try to understand the student Rameyer. It's so consistent with his thinking and with his life and how the Gemara said that. Remember, the first thing that we said about Rameyer is that Lehaya b'dayer shel Rameyer kamayu. There was nobody in Rameyer's generation that was as big as him. He was the biggest student of Elisha ben Avoya. Aval ein halacha kamosa, but we never say halacha like Rameyer. If there's an argument, Rameyer, somebody else, go to somebody else. Why? Because Chacham never understood him. They were never able to get to the depth of it. What are you dangling and teaching about Sheretz's being kosher? It doesn't make any sense. And why are you learning from Elisha ben Avuya? Where do you see some kosher in this guy? The fact of the matter is, Rabbi Meir was the greatest. Here's the lesson. Here's the lesson. Rameyer was the greatest in the generation. Elisha ben Avuya was the worst in the generation. And Rameyer looked at Elisha ben Avuya and said, I want to learn from you. That's the lesson of the story. I want to learn from you. There's a lot to learn from you. I want to nash. And I'm not letting go. And I feel that in Shemayim, there's a good part to you also. And that's what the Gemara goes on to say. There's a good part to you also. Now, he wasn't stupid. He understood that he's doing terrible things. He did do terrible things. But he also understood that there's no such thing as just terrible. I could even tell you a Sheretz is kosher. And he learned from him, and he learned from him, and learned from him. And, by the way, was ostracized by the community for doing so. He was ostracized. He's ein halacha kamosa. We don't pass him like Rameyer. We don't go halacha like Rav Meir. So he gave up a lot to do this. But this is the beginning of understanding of something that I don't know if we'll ever understand completely, but the beginning of understanding Elisha ben Avoya and the generation and the challenges that he was in.
Isn't it ironic that his father, according to the interpretation of his father, the Bris, wanted him to learn Torah just L'shem Shemayim, and the person who learned from him was the person who gave up any type of kavod just to learn with him. It's the opposite. Yeah.
Right. So if he understood that, okay, his problem is that he's not L'shem Shemayim, but there's still a lot of Torah in there. Yeah, it's ironic. I agree. I agree.